as this narrative is, in my opinion, of no trivial value to those who in your name go to subdue those countries and bring them to a knowledge of the true faith and true Lord, and under the imperial dominion. I have written this with much exactness, and although in it may be read things very novel and for some persons difficult to believe, nevertheless they may without hesitation credit me as strictly faithful. Better than to exaggerate, I have lessened in all things, and it is sufficient to say the relation is offered to your majesty in truth. On the 17th day of June in the year 1527, the governor left the port of San Lucar de Barrameda, authorized and commanded by your majesty to conquer and govern the provinces of the Main, extending from the River Palmas to the Cape of Florida. The fleet he took was 5 ships, in which went 600 men, a few more or less. The officers were these, with their rank. Myself, Cabeza de Baca, treasurer and high sheriff, Alfonso Enrique, comptroller, Alonso de Solis, distributor to your majesty and assessor, Juan Suarez, a friar of St. Francis, commissary, and 4 more friars of the same order. A wind came from the south, which drove us from the land towards the coast of Florida. We came in sight on Tuesday, the 12th day of April, and sailed along the coast. On Holy Thursday, we anchored near the shore in the mouth of a bay, at the head of which we saw some houses, or habitations, of Indians. The next day, the governor raised ensigns for your majesty and took possession of the country in your royal name. The following day, the Indians of the town came and spoke to us, but as we had no interpreter, we could not understand what was meant. They made many signs and menaces and appeared to say that we must go away from the country. With this, they left us and went off, offering no interruption. The governor called us aside. Being together, he said that he desired to penetrate the interior. He asked us for our views. I said it appeared to me that under no circumstances ought we to leave the vessels until they were in a secure and peopled harbour. The horses were in no condition to serve us in such circumstances as might occur. Above all, that we were going without being able to communicate with the Indians by use of speech and without an interpreter, and we could but poorly understand ourselves with them or learn what we desired to know of the land. That we were about to enter a country of which we had no account, and had no knowledge of its character, of what there was in it, or by what people inhabited, and besides all this, we had not food to sustain us in wandering, we knew not whither. But, to the commissary, everything appeared otherwise. And, on Saturday, 1st of May, the date of this occurrence, the governor ordered to each man going with him 2 pounds of biscuit and 1/2 pound of bacon, and thus victualled, we took up our march into the country. We of the mounted men consisted of 40. We travelled on the allowance we had received 15 days, without finding any other thing to eat than palmitos, which are like those of Andalusia. In all that time we saw not an Indian, and found neither village nor house. We were going ever in quest of Apalache, the country of which the Indians told us, having for our guides those we had taken. While going on our way, a number came in sight, prepared for battle, and though we called to them, they would not return nor await our arrival, but retired, following us on the road. The governor left some cavalry in ambush, which, sallying as the natives were about to pass, seized 3 or 4, who thenceforth served as guides. That night we came to a wide and deep river with a very rapid current. As we would not venture to cross on rafts, we made a canoe for the purpose, and spent a day in getting over. Had the Indians desired to oppose us, they could well have disputed our passage, for even with their help we had great difficulty in making it. One of the mounted men, Juan Velasquez by name, a native of Cuellar, impatient of detention, entered the river, when the violence of the current casting him from his horse, he grasped the reins of the bridle, and both were drowned. The people of that chief found the body of the beast, and having told us about where in the stream below we could find the corpse, it was sought for. This death caused us much regret, for until now, not a man had been lost. The horse afforded supper to many that night. They conducted us through a country very difficult to travel and wonderful to look upon. In it are vast forests, the trees being astonishingly high. So many were fallen on the ground as to obstruct our way in such a manner that we could not advance without much going about, and a considerable increase of toil. Many of the standing trees were riven from top to bottom by bolts of lightning, which fall in that country of frequent storms and tempests. The Indians we had seen so far in Florida are all archers. They go naked, are large of body, and appear at a distance, like giants. They are of admirable proportions, very spare and of great activity and strength. The bows they use are as thick as the arm, of 11 or 12 palms in length, which they will discharge at 200 paces with so great a precision that they miss nothing. The journey onwards was extremely arduous. There were not horses enough to carry the sick, who went on increasing in numbers day by day, and we knew of no cure. It was piteous and painful to witness our perplexity and distress. I cease here to relate more of this, because anyone may suppose what would occur in a country so remote and malign. The governor called all to him, and of each apart he asked advice as to what he should do to get out of a country so miserable. This, with many other embarrassments being considered, and entertaining many plans, we coincided in one great project extremely difficult to put into operation, and that was to build vessels in which we might get away. This appeared impossible to everyone. We knew not how to construct, nor were there tools, nor iron. Finally, no one thing of so many that are necessary, nor any man who had any knowledge of their manufacture. And, above all, there was nothing to eat while building for those who should labour. Before we embarked, there died more than 40 men of disease and hunger, without enumerating those destroyed by the Indians. By the 22nd of the month of September, the horses had been consumed, only one remaining, and only on that day we embarked. But a heavy storm came on that detained us for 6 days. We, not daring to go to the sea, and as it was now 5 days since we had drunk, our thirst was so excessive that it put us to the extremity of swallowing salt water, by which some of the men became so crazed that 3 or 4 suddenly died. I state this so briefly because I do not believe there is any necessity for particularly relating the sufferings and toils amongst which we found ourselves, since, considering the place where we were and the little hope we had of relief, everyone may conceive much of what must have passed. The cold was severe, and our bodies were so emaciated, the bones might be counted with little difficulty, having become the perfect figures of death. For myself, I can say that from the month of May past, I had eaten no other thing than maize, and sometimes I found myself obliged to eat it unparched, for although the beasts were slaughtered while the boats were building, I could never eat their flesh. And I did not eat fish 10 times. I state this to avoid giving excuses, and that everyone may judge in what condition we were. I talked with the Christians, and said that if it appeared well to them, I would beg the Indians to take us to their houses. Some, who had been in New Spain, replied that we ought not to think of it, for if they should do so, they would sacrifice us to their idols. But seeing no better course, and that any other led to a nearer and more certain death, I disregarded what was said, and besought the Indians to take us to their dwellings. They signified that it would give them delight, and that we should tarry a little that they might do what we asked. Presently 30 men loaded themselves with wood and started for their houses. An hour after our arrival, they began to dance and hold great rejoicing, which lasted all night. Although for us there was no joy, festivity, nor sleep, awaiting the hour they should make us victims. But in the morning they gave us fish and roots, showing us such hospitality that we were reassured and lost somewhat the fear of sacrifice. To this island we gave the name Malhardo. The people we found there are large and well-formed. They have no other arms than bows and arrows. The men have one of their nipples bored from side to side, and some have both, wearing a cane in each. They have the underlip, also bored, and wear in it a piece of cane the breadth of half a finger. their women are accustomed to great toil. The stay they make on the island is from October to the end of February. These people love their offspring more than any in the world and treat them with the greatest mildness. When it occurs that a son dies, the parents and kindred weep, as does everybody, the wailing continuing for a whole year. After a year of mourning has passed, the rites of the dead are performed, then they wash and purify themselves from the stain of smoke. They lament all their deceased in this manner, except the aged, for whom they show no regret, as they say that their season has passed, they having no enjoyment, and that living they would occupy the earth and take ailment from the young. Every man has an acknowledged wife. The physicians are allowed more freedom. They may have two or three wives, among whom exists the greatest friendship and harmony. On an island of which I have spoken, they wish to make us physicians, without examination or inquiring for diplomas. They cure by blowing upon the sick, and with that breath and the imposing of hands they cast out infirmity. Their custom is, on finding themselves sick, to send for a physician, and after he has applied the cure, they give him not only all they have, but seek among their relatives for more to give. Our method was to bless the sick, breathing upon them and reciting a Pater Noster and an Ave Maria, praying with all earnestness to God our Lord that he would give health and influence them to make us some good return. In his clemency, he willed that all those for whom we supplicated should tell the others that they were sound and in health, directly after we made the sign of the Blessed Cross over them. For this, the Indians treated us kindly. They deprived themselves of food that they might give to us, and presented us with skins and some trifles. So protracted was the hunger we there experienced that many times I was 3 days without eating. The natives also endured as much, and it appeared to me a thing impossible that life could be so prolonged, although afterwards I found myself in greater hunger and necessity, which I shall speak of further on. I was obliged to remain with the people belonging to this island more than a year, and because of the hard work they put upon me and the harsh treatment, I resolved to flee from them and go to those of Charuco, who inhabit the forests and country of the main, the life I led being unbearable. Besides much other labour, I had to get out roots from below the water, and from among the cane where they grew in the ground. From this employment I had my fingers so worn, that did a straw but touch them, they would bleed. Accordingly, I put myself to contriving how I might go over to the other Indians, among whom matters turned somewhat more favourably for me. I set to trafficking, and strove to make my employment profitable in the ways I could best contrive, and by that means I got food and good treatment. The Indians would beg me to go from one quarter to another for things of which they have need, for in consequence of incessant hostilities they could not traverse the country, nor make many exchanges. With my merchandise and trade I went into the interior as far as I pleased, and travelled along the coast 40 or 50 leagues. The principal wares were cones and other pieces of sea snail, conches used for cutting, and fruit like a bean of the highest value among them, which they use as a medicine and employ in their dances and festivities. Such were what I carried into the interior, and in barter I got and brought back skins, ochre, with which they rub and colour the face, hard canes of which to make arrows, and tassels of the hair of deer that by dyeing they make red. This occupation suited me well, for the travel allowed me liberty to go where I wished. I was not obliged to work and was not a slave. My leading object while journeying in this business was to find out the way by which I should go forward, and I became well known. The inhabitants were pleased when they saw me, and those who did not know me sought and desired the acquaintance for my reputation. The hardships that I underwent in this were long to tell, as well as peril and privation as of storms and cold. Oftentimes they overtook me alone and in the wilderness, but I came forth from them all by the great mercy of God, our Lord. I was in this country nearly 6 years, alone among the Indians, and naked like them. I moved on and remained with the Avavares people 8 months, reckoned by the number of moons. In all this time, people came to seek us from many parts, and they said that most truly we were children of the sun, because of the great solicitation made by these coming from different parts to find us. We all became physicians, although in being venturous and bold to attempt the performance of any cure, I was the most remarkable. No one whom we treated but told us that he left well, and so great was the confidence that they would become healed if we administered to them, they even believed that whilst we remained, none of them could die. These and the rest of the people behind related an extraordinary circumstance, and by the way they counted, there appeared to be 15 or 16 years since it occurred. They said that a man wandered through the country, whom they called Bad Thing. He was small of body and wore a beard, and they never distinctly saw his features. When he came to the house where they lived, their hair stood up and trembled. When he entered and seized whom he chose, and giving them three great gashes in the side with a very sharp flint, he put his hand through them, drawing forth the entrails, from one of which he would cut off a portion, more or less, the length of a palm, and throw it on the embers. A little after this, he would begin to unite it, and putting his hands on the wounds, these would instantly become healed. These things they told us of, we much laughed at and ridiculed, and they, seeing our incredulity, brought to us many of those they said he had seized. We told them he was an evil one, and in the best way we could, gave them to understand that if they would believe in God, our Lord, and become Christians like us, they need have no fear of him, nor would he dare to come and inflict these injuries, and they might be certain he would not venture to appear while we remained in the land. They were all ignorant of time, either by the sun or moon, nor do they reckon by the month or year. They better know and understand the differences of the seasons, when the fruits come to ripen, where the fish resort, and the position of the stars, at which they are ready and practiced. We always went naked, like them, and covered ourselves at night with deerskins. The children are suckled until the age of 12 years, when they are old enough to get support for themselves. We asked why they rear them in this manner, and they said because of the great poverty of the land. They are all warlike, and have as much strategy for protecting themselves against enemies as they could have were they reared in Italy in continual feuds. They are the most watchful in danger of any people I know. If they fear an enemy, they are awake all night long, even with a bow at his side and a dozen arrows. They all differ in their habitations, towns, and tongues. Everywhere they produce stupefaction with a smoke, and for that they will give whatever they possess. When the women have their indisposition, they seek food only for themselves, as no one else will eat of what they bring. In the time I was among these people, I witnessed a diabolical practice. A man living with another, one of those who are emasculate and impotent. These go habited like women, and perform their duties, use the bow, and carry heavy loads. Among them we saw many mutilated in the way I describe. They are more muscular than the other men, and taller. They bear very weighty burdens. When we saw sure signs of Christians, and heard how near we were to them, we gave thanks to Lord our God, for having chosen to bring us out of a captivity so melancholy and wretched. The delight we felt let each one conjecture, when he shall remember the length of time we were in that country, the suffering and perils we underwent. We travelled 25 leagues, little more or less, and reached a town of friendly Indians. The alcalde left us there and went on 3 leagues further to a town called Culiacan, where was Melchior Diaz, principal alcalde and the captain of the province. The alcalde mayor knew of the expedition, and hearing of our return, he immediately left that night and came to where we were. He wept with us, giving praise to God our Lord for having extended over us such great care. He comforted and entertained us hospitably. We left for Mexico. Many came out on the roads to gaze at us, giving thanks to God for having saved us from so many calamities. We arrived at Mexico on Sunday, the day before the Vespers of St. Iago, where we were handsomely treated by the Viceroy and the Marquis de Valle, and welcomed with joy. They gave us clothing and offered whatever they had. On the day of St. Iago was a celebration and a joust of reeds with bulls.